Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Dharma Lakshana Nana Narakash Chanuvarnitaha Manvantaras Chavakyata Adya Shrayambhuvo Yataha. Translation. You have also described the varieties of hellish life that result from impious activities. And you have described the first Manvantara, which was presided over by Swayambhuva Manu, the son of Lord Brahma. Texts number 4 and 5. Priyavrato Tanapadur. Priyavrato tanapadur vamsas charitani cha vamsas charitani cha dvipavarsha samudradri dvipavarsha samudradri Nad yudhana vanaspatim. Nad yudhana vanaspatim. Dara mandala sangstanam. Dara mandala sangstanam. Bhaga lakshana mannataha. Bhaga lakshana mannataha. Jyotisham vivaranam cha Jyotisham vivaranam cha Yathedam asrijad vibhu Yathedam asrijad vibhu Priyavrat Totanapadur Vamsas Chacharitani cha Dvipavarsha Samudradri Nadyudhyana Vanaspatim Dara Mandala Sangstanam Bhaga Lakshana Manataha Jyotisham Vavaranam cha Yathedam Asri Jatibhu. Priyavrato Tanapadur Vamsas Chattarachani cha Vipavasha Samudradri Nayutyana Vanaspatim Dharamandala Sangstanam Bhaga Lakshanamannataha Jyotisham Vivaranam cha Yathedam Asrijat Vibhu. Sanam Bhaga Lakshanamanataha ज्योतिषं विवराणां च रथेदमसृजत् विभुः प्रियवृत्तं नरकश्च द्वीपवर्षसमुद्राद्रि नद्युद्यानवनस्पतिम् दरामन्दरसंस्थानम् भागलङ्क्षणमानतः ज्योतिषं विवराणां च अतेदमाश्रितं विधु वंशतच्चरितानि च द्वीपवर्षसमुद्राद्रि नद्युद्यानवनस्पतिम् दारमण्डलसंस्थानम् नागालक्षणमानतः ज्योतिषां विवराणां च यथेदमसृजद् विभो प्रियव्रता अप्रियव्रत उत्थानपादो एण्ड् अव् उत्थानपाद् वंशः द डैनस्टि तच्चरितानि देयर् केरेक्टरिस्टिक्स् च आल्सो द्वीपा डिफरेण्ट् प्लेनेट्स् वर्ष lands, samudra, oceans and seas, adri, mountains, nadi, rivers, udyana, gardens, vanaspatim and trees, dharamandala of the planet earth, sangstanam, situation, bhaga, according to divisions, lakshana, different symptoms, manataha, and measurements, jyotisham of the sun and other luminaries, vivaranam of the lower planetary systems, cha, en, yatha, as, idam, this, Asrijat, created, Vibhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord, you have described the dynasties and characteristics of King Priyavrat and King Uttanapad. The Supreme Personality of Godhead created this material world with various universes, planetary systems, planets and stars, with varied lands, seas, oceans, mountains, rivers, gardens and trees, all with different characteristics. These are divided among this planet Earth, the luminaries in the sky, and the lower planetary systems. You have very clearly described these planets and living entities who live on them. Purport. Hear the words, yathedam asrijit prabhu, clearly indicate that the Supreme Lord, the great, almighty personality of Godhead, created this entire material world with its different varieties of planets, stars, and so forth. Atheists try to conceal the hand of God, which is present in every creation, but they cannot explain how all these creations could come into existence without a competent, intelligent, and almighty power behind them. simply to imagine or speculate is a waste of time. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text number 8, the Lord says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo, I am the origin of everything. Mata sarvam pravartate, whatever exists in the creation emanates from me. Iti matva bhajante mang buddha bhava samanvitaha. When one fully understands that I create everything by my omnipotence, one becomes firmly situated in devotional service and fully surrenders at my lotus feet. Unfortunately, the unintelligent cannot immediately understand Krishna's supremacy. Nonetheless, if they associate with devotees and read authorized books, they may gradually come to the proper understanding, although this may take many, many births. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text number 19, Bahunang jangmanam ante, gyanavang mam prabodhyante, vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabaha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Vasudev, Krishna, is the creator of everything, and his energy is displayed in various ways, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 4 through 5. A combination of the material energy, Bhumir, Apo, Nalo, Vayu, and the spiritual energy, the living entity, exists in every creation. Therefore, the same principle, the combination of the Supreme Spirit and the material elements, is the cause of the cosmic manifestation. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this verse and purport by Srila Prabhupada gives us a clear indication of the atheistic mentality concerning the creation. Srila Prabhupada says that the atheists try to conceal the hand of God in the creation. They try. Actually, it was a well-accepted fact that God created everything. Whatever we see is the creation of God. But due to a rise of the atheistic mentality, the so-called scientist tried to explain the existence of everything minus God. There is no God. Right? Okay, if there is no God, then how did everything come about? Well, they have their explanations about the origin of the universe, that there was a big bang, a big explosion, and then from that gradually everything came about. But Prabhupada said this is another foolishness, right? Even if there was a big bang, a big explosion, how did the big bang happen, right? If there's an explosion, let's say in the kitchen, all of a sudden, big explosion, right? What happened? Who did it? How did it happen? You know, they found out that the cylinder leaked and the pujari lit a match and there was a big explosion, right? But if somebody says, no, it just happened. It just happened. Right? By chance there was an explosion. Well, nobody will accept that. When there were explosions on the train in Bombay, or there was an explosion on 9/11, and the Twin Towers blew up in New York. There were so many police that came and investigated how it happened. Right? Would anyone accept that? No, no need to investigate anything. It just happened. Would anyone accept that? No. In the same way, when the scientists say that there was the Big Bang, there was an explosion. So the intelligent person would question, how did that? Who was the source of that explosion? Right? And that, Srila Prabhupada explains, is the intelligent of the theist. The intelligence of the theist, he wants to know what is behind the creation. What is that intelligence? Now the scientific theory is so outlandish. It's so inconceivable. And people that were previously solid evolutionists are solid atheists, that there was no God. When they look into the intricacies of the universe, when they see all the different systems and complicated arrangements that are there in life, then they realize there must be some intelligence behind all this. Flagella. Flagella is a single-celled animal, right? It's just one cell. But it moves around in fluid by a small tail that it has on the cell. And the tail rotates like the propeller on a boat, right? And therefore it moves in fluids. Flagella, right? If you put some on a petri plate, you can grow, and they multiply. More and more will come, right? So they have a system in the mitochondria of the soul, which is kind of like the nucleus of the cell, right? That all of a sudden it starts at some stage to divide. So you have, instead of one cell, you have two cells, exactly the same, two different cells, with the same amount of DNA and chromosome material and genetic pattern, etc. Right? So when intelligent science look into this and they see that this flagella moves around by a propeller-like tail, and there's certain parts to it, just like if you have a boat propeller, right? It works in a certain way. There's a couple of gears that have to be there, that have to work in a certain way, right? And that can only be figured out by some intelligent person, how to put the gears of the propeller of a boat in such a way that when it turns, it can move the boat. Right? Now, even compared to the boat example, the flagella, or this one-celled animal that has a propeller-like tail and moves around in the water, is thousands of times more complicated even the propeller of a boat. So these persons came to the conclusion, although they are steeped in atheism, that there must be some kind of intelligence that's behind everything. Otherwise it couldn't happen. Why? Because the hardcore atheistic scientists, they want everyone to believe that everything happened just by chance. It all happened by chance. It just so happened that after the Big Bang, everything came in order. But we don't have experience of that. Where is the experience that from chaos, you know, after an explosion, what it's like? It's chaos. Everything is wrecked. The windows are busted out. People are lying dead on the floor. Blood is flowing everywhere. It's an explosion. A terrorist explosion. What happens after a terrorist explosion? Chaos. Call the police. Call the ambulance. It's chaos. The order is destroyed by the explosion. But what the scientists would have us believe, that by the explosion came order. Everything became systematic. Well, where do we have that experience? That by the explosion everything became systematic. It all became topsy-turvy. So intelligent persons, they can't go along with this. That from chaos, total chaos, comes order. But what is our actual experience? That something works orderly, fashionably, right? It's done because there's some intelligence behind it. Just like on Janmashtami. If we all of a sudden say, we don't need queues, we don't need these barricades, we don't need ropes, we don't need anything, because it'll all just work out on its own. You know, lakhs of people are coming at Janmashtami, and it doesn't matter where you serve out the prasadam, or even if there is prasadam, because it's all going to just happen. Do you believe that? It's all just going to happen? The whole thing is going to become organized on its own? No, there'll be chaos. So for months in advance, the temple management sit down, and now it's pretty much automatic because by trial and error things have come into place. But still it has to be organized. Who's going to do what? Who's going to look after security? Who's going to look after so many different things? Volunteers, etc., etc. Organization, intelligence, some buddhi has to be applied. Then you can get order. That's our experience. Now, if, you know, that's our experience in everyday life. Well, the scientists who were originally hardcore, blatant atheists, as they studied the workings and the systems of nature, how complicated nature is. In this bale tree, right? The top leaf of the bale tree also gets water. The water comes down from maybe 100 feet deep or 150 feet deep and goes into the root. And that water is transported all the way up to the top leaf. Right? The tree has its own pumping system. Right? And the walls of the cell of the tree, from one cell that becomes filled with water to the cell that has less water, the water flows over into that cell, and that happens millions and billions of times till the water comes up to the top leaf. That's organization. How that works. How the tree takes mud, the elements from mud, and the elements from sunlight and water, and turns that through the system of photosynthesis into a usable energy for the plant. That takes an intelligence, right? Like the material body that we have. If you get a cut, the blood starts to flow out, but then the blood coagulates. It becomes hardened when it hits the air, and that creates a stoppage of the blood. If it didn't stop, what would happen? Cut them, right? But by the arrangement of nature, that blood coagulates, right? Through the hemoglobin and other elements, the platelets that are in the blood. So you don't bleed to death when you get a cut. That's intelligent, isn't it? Who thought of that? If you can say, well, it just happened. Intelligent people can't accept that. Blind fools accept that. So there's a whole class of scientists. They don't give the nomenclature God, but they call it that there's someone there who has made the intelligent design. It's called ID. There's an intelligence behind the design of the universe. So we know who that intelligence is. That's the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada mentions in Srimad Bhagavatam that when the scientist put one satellite into space and it goes around the earth, so there's many great minds that are involved in that. How to propel the satellite out past the atmosphere, out past the earth's gravitational force, right? Which is about how far up? Anybody know where gravitation... If I take this cartel and I drop it, what happens? Goes to the ground. Why? Because of gravitation, right? So that gravitational force only has its effect, it starts to loosen up after how many miles straight up? Ananta? 200 miles. Even after 100, it's loosened. But like 200 miles out, the satellites are orbiting around, free from the gravitational force of the Earth. Some gravitation is there, that's why it's going around. Right? So in order to figure all this out, how big the rocket should be to get it 200 miles up, right? Out past the Earth's gravitational force, it takes intelligence. It takes great minds, right? And to have that satellite perfectly orbit, and what's the motion of its orbit, etc., etc. So if we can appreciate that, it takes great intelligence to do that feat. What about the huge orbits that are there in the universe? The huge satellites, like Earth, the Sun, the Moon, Mars, Jupiter, Venus. They all have their orbits, right? It's described in the previous canto that they're orbiting, that the pole star, the Dhruva's planet, is kind of in the middle. And there's these imaginary strings on all the different planets that come out. And they kind of, like a bull that's attached to the center of a pole with a rope, they go around the pole star in their orbit. And they keep their orbits. They keep their positions. So what about that intelligence that organized that? That we want to just write off as, oh, it just happened. There's no intelligence. Just happened. So, Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, is saying that people that have given these fantastic explanations, that there's no intelligence behind everything. They're simply wasting their time with their various theories of evolution, their theories of creation, right? And they would, it would be much more valuable for them to use their time by understanding the explanation from Vedic literature and use their scientific knowledge to understand the explanations that are there in Vedic literature as opposed to speculating themselves. That's called the descending process of knowledge. You start from the platform of knowledge and work that way. Instead of starting from the platform of ignorance and try to ascend to the platform of knowledge. That is actually just speculation. And no one can get real knowledge from that platform. Real knowledge comes about by understanding, taking knowledge from the Supreme Lord, and following the instructions that are given clearly by the Supreme Lord from the Vedic literatures, Shastra, especially Bhagavad Gita, which is directly coming from the Lord. So, if one who follows the Shastras can come to actual conclusion, and that actual conclusion, that is, everything is coming from Vasudeva Sarvamiti, and that may take many lifetimes to come to that conclusion. But one can very quickly come to that conclusion by following the process of bhakti. And bhakti is performed chiefly and mainly by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Then one can properly assess what is this material universe, right? And that the material energy is but a combination. It doesn't move on its own. Just like a body that has no soul, it doesn't move. It's dead. That's a dead body. The soul is gone. Similarly, due to the presence of the Supreme Soul in this creation, who impregnates the creation with his parts and parcels, the living entities, therefore this creation moves. Without that, it wouldn't move. This the scientists cannot understand, and until they do, their knowledge will be incomplete and speculative at best, bordering on downright ignorance. The real scientists of the world are the devotees of the Lord. They can have real knowledge because they take that knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there's a nice book that was written by our god brother, Rupa Vilas Prabhu, who right now lives in England, but for many, many years he lived in Vrindavan. And he would regularly give classes on the appearance day of the Acharyas, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And from those notes that he made in his study, he compiled this book. Right? So, this is a very interesting book. It's not possible to give all the information in one class that's in this book. But I highly recommend that everyone take the opportunity, take the time to go through this book called The Seventh Goswami. One person had said about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that I haven't seen the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, but I have seen the seventh Goswami, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Right? Now, why is that? Well, that we'll try to explain a little bit. But first of all, let us offer the pranam prayer to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Please repeat. Namo Bhaktivinodaya Sachit Ananda Namine Ghora Shakti Surupaya Rupanugavarayate. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Satchidananda Bhakti Vinod, who is transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. So in order to understand Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his preaching, one has to kind of understand the situation in India at the time. The India was under the control of the British, and the British had this idea that everything Indian was immature, juvenile, pagan, you know, ungodly, and so many different things, uneducated, and that the responsibility was on the British to educate Indians with Western education, right? And that's what they set out to do. They tried to inculcate that their own culture, the Indian people's own culture, was bad, and that the British were bringing the real knowledge to India. This is what their plan was. And they figured that the best way to do this was to teach English and to teach Western culture, right? Teach Western habits, teach Western dress, and So they educated, quote unquote, Indian people, and then they were the best ones to, you know, try to re-educate the masses, to turn them away from the old culture to the new Western culture. And so a group of Indians, first of all in Bengal, the education process started there, right? And teaching English. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was one of those persons who was educated in English. And he started the English medium, first of all in Orissa. But he did not, as he went along and saw his contemporaries being absorbed in their own kind of speculation, what they did was they were called Brahmanos. And they were taking Western ideas and the Vedic culture, and they were trying to make a khichdi out of it. Right? They were using Western rational thought and trying to superimpose that on the culture of India, which was a great speculation. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was never attracted by that. Right? And as he went on in his life, he became influenced by various persons who were devotees and his own cultural upbringing. Right? He was born in a place called Ulagram, which is in West Bengal, in the district of Nadia. And I looked on the map, and it's actually about, say, 60 kilometers from Ranagat. You know where Ranagat is? If you drive from Calcutta to Mayapur, after about 2 hours, you'll come to Ranagat. And then after about 1 hour comes Mayapur, Krishnanagar. So when you get to Ranagat, you head north to Mayapur, but if you turn right on a highway there, it goes to Birnagar, which is the same place as Ulagram. Ulagram is now part of that Birnagar. So that's where he was born. And he was christened the name Kedarnath Datta. Datta is a subcaste. They're called Kayast, Suvarnavaniks, same caste as Srila Prabhupada. But his ancestors were, from his mother's side of the family, were from a place called Choti in Orissa. And his maternal grandfather was very, very wealthy. His paternal grandfather was also very, very wealthy. So he was born in great opulence. But after some time, when his maternal grandfather died, his managers tried to usurp the property. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's father was called to Orissa to help set things proper. And while he was in Orissa, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in this Ulagram. So if you get an opportunity, if you're in Mayapur, we have a center in Ranagat, an ISKCON center, and they have every day for Raj Bhog, they have Chapan Bhog. 56 different items are offered to Lord Jagannath Baladev Subhadra there in Ranagat. And I've had the opportunity, the good fortune, to have that Mahaprasadam. And in my estimation, it's probably the best in ISKCON. If you ever get an opportunity, you can stop in Ranagat. The devotees from the BBT in Mayapur manage that center. It's one of the devotees' ancestral property, and which was donated to ISKCON, and they've started a temple there. And every year they have Rath Yatra at the same time that they have the Rath Yatra in Jagannath Puri. And for 3 hours they close the national highway while Lord Jagannath goes in his Rath Yatra procession. But from Ranagat, maybe 6 kilometers, you can go to this Ula Gram, to the birth site of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he spent, afterwards, his father brought the family to Orissa, and he spent a lot of time in this Choti. And his grandfather, his father's father, was very an interesting figure, right? He had great affection for his grandson, who also had great affection for him. He was a devotee of Krishna. He was a very powerful person. Right? He had lived his life in Calcutta, and he was very famous in Calcutta. But at some point when he became old, he left Calcutta and he was living very simply in Orissa. Right? He was a very powerful person. He used to catch cobras from holes. Right? Yes. Right. And he was always very fit. Right? Very fit. And just 3 days before he died, he told Kedarnath, who was there visiting, don't go anywhere for 3 days. You should be here. I may leave this world. But to Kedarnath, to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he appeared quite fit. How was he saying he was leaving? But exactly on the third day, he sat in the courtyard and he was chanting the holy name. And he called Kedarnath. And he said, when you're 27 years old, whatever you're doing at that time, that will be your lifelong goal. And you'll become a great devotee of the Lord. And then he died. So that's described here in this book. But, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own father died when he was young. And there were a lot of problems. All of a sudden, there were a lot of financial problems that were coming. And he had gone to Calcutta to further his education. And he did that. He became a writer. And he was well known for his writings, right? And so many things happened. His mother died. He was married when he was 13 years old. And the girl he married was 5 years old. And that's how they used to do it, you know. That they married him young. But they never lived together. He lived in his life, his house, and she lived in her house. And when they became of age, then they would live together. So that was the situation for Bhaktivinoda Thakur also. And his first wife died after they started staying together. I think they had one child. And then she died. So he married again. And he married a lady that became known as Bhagavati. And so by her he had many children. And he took the examination for government service, and then gradually he was posted in various places. Before that he was a teacher in Cuttack. He was teaching in the high school there. And so he became very well known amongst the British government officers as someone who was very responsible in his duties. Very, very responsible. And that way he became very sought after by the British officers. They wanted to have him in their area of concern because he would handle things very properly. Right? But at the same time, being very responsible in the British Raj government, he was very much interested in knowing what is the absolute truth. And he had heard about Chaitanya Charitamrita, but he didn't have a copy. There was no copy available. So he was trying to find out a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in the interim, he wrote many things. He wrote articles for magazines, newspapers, and then he eventually got posted in Jagannath Puri, and many things happened there in Jagannath Puri. One thing is that he made all of the offerings to Lord Jagannath happen on time, and what should be included in the offering he organized very carefully. Right? He also found out that the king was cheating lakhs of rupees from the temple. The king of Puri at the time. And he, when he found out about it, he forced the king to pay for all Lord Jagannath's vogue until the money was adjusted. Right? So the king, he didn't like that very much, and he tried to have Bhaktivinoda Thakur murdered. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that Lord Jagannath was always there to protect him, and the king couldn't do anything. But besides that, there was this, what was his name? Bishakishen. Yes. He was this imposter who was saying that he was Mahavishnu. And he told all these simple village people, he didn't live too far from Bhubaneswar. He had an ashram. And he was telling all these village people that very soon he'll kill all the British, and then, you know, India will be ruled again by the Indian people. And he used to perform magic tricks. He could manifest fire, and he cured some people that were sick. But he also said that he was the supreme, so he used to dance with women and other people's wives, and he started having sexual relationships with them. So the men became very upset then with him. Right? So the news, the complaints came to the British, and the British sent, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur there to solve the situation. So he met this Bishakishen, and he said that asked him what did he think he was doing, and he said, "Well, I'm Mahavishnu, and I'm going to drive away all the British, right? And I'll make you the governor of Orissa," he told Bhaktivinoda Thakur, "because I know everything about you. You're very capable. But you're working for the British. You work for me," he said. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur told him that you're an imposter. You're not Mahavishnu, right? And that we've come here to arrest you. And then he became angry. He said, "We'll see how you can arrest me." Right? So that night, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went away from the village and he camped out nearby in a tent. And the next day he came with so many police officers, they had guns, so that that bogus yogi was forced to come with Bhaktivinoda Thakur back to Puri. And while they were headed back, before he actually captured him, he had fire coming out of his hair. He was showing a display of fire coming out of him. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't at all disturbed. He had him arrested, put him in a bullock cart, and took him to Puri. So there the trial lasted, and it was a big sensation. Many of his followers were outside the courtroom, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur every day was going to the court. And just then his family members became sick, his daughter became sick, his wife became sick. And still he said, "Don't worry, Krishna will protect us. Lord Jagannath is there, he'll protect us." And in this way they continued to prosecute this bogus person. And finally it came the night before the judgment, supposed to give the judgment. And that night the Thakur had a very powerful pain in his chest. Very powerful. He could hardly get up. It was so painful, right? And his wife was insisting, don't go to the court. But besides the pain, he, you know, tolerated it and went to the court and passed the judgment that this, for his, you know, threats to the British government, for his imitation and fraudulent displays of being God, he should be sentenced to 3 years in prison. Right? So, when the Bishop Shane was being taken out of the courtroom, one of the British officers there grabbed him and shaved his head, cut off all his hair, because he had heard these yogis sometimes have the power, it's in their hair. So as soon as his hair was cut off, he fell to the ground, completely weakened, right? And actually it was a fact, he was keeping all his so-called tantric powers in his jetia. So while he was in jail, after about 6 months, he took poison and he died. So this is one of the famous things that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had done while he was there in Puri. But also in Puri, he met many saintly persons, and he would keep their association, right? He would hear from them about Srimad Bhagavatam and about Chaitanya Charitamrita. He would hear and chant with them. And he wrote many books, prolific. If you see the list of books that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written, one after another, he was coming up with another title, another time. And he was also a very famous poet. He would write poems. He wrote a poem about Haridas Thakur. He wrote a very nice poem about Vaishnavs, you know. So he was a very prolific writer. And I thought we'd read one of his poems. He wrote this poem in the year 1871 when he was the magistrate in Jagannath Puri. And he wrote it in English. It's a very nice poem. I just thought I'd read it. You want to hear this poem? Okay. It's a little bit long, but it's worth it because it shows the expertise of Bhaktivinoda. Even though he was the magistrate and dealing with so many government things, right? Still, he found time to write some very wonderful poetry. Okay, this is called Saragrahi Vaishnava. Alas for those that spend their days in festive mirth and joy, the dazzling, deadly liquid forms their heart for air employ. The shining bottles charm their eyes and draw their hearts' embrace. The slaves of wine can never rise from what we call disgrace. Was man intended to be a brute in work and heart? Should man, the Lord of all around, from common sense depart? Man's glory is in common sense, dictating us the grace that man is made to live and love the beauteous heaven's embrace. The flesh is not our own, alas, the mortal frame a chain. The soul confined for former wrongs should try to rise again. Why then this childish play in that which cannot be our own, which falls within 100 years as if a rose ablown? Our life is but a rosy hue to go ere long to naught. The soul alone would last for air with good or evil fraught. How deep the thought of times to be, how grave the aspect looks, and wrapped in awe become, oh, I, when reading nature's books. Man's life to him a problem dark, a screen both left and right. No soul hath come to tell us what exist beyond our sight. But then a voice, how deep and soft, within ourselves is left. Man, man, thou art immortal soul, thee death can never melt. For thee thy sire on high has kept a store of bliss above. To end of time thou art, O his, who once but purest love. O love, thy power and spell benign, now melt my soul to God. How can my earthly words describe that feeling soft and broad? Enjoyment, sorrow, what but lots to which the flesh is heir? The soul that sleeps alone concludes in them it hath a share. And then, my friends, no more enjoy nor weep for all below. The women, wine, and flesh of beasts no love on thee bestow. But shine to love thy brother man and give thyself to God, and God doth know your wages fair. This fact is true and broad. Forget the past that sleeps, and ne'er the future dream at all, but act in times that are with thee, and progress thee shall call. But tell me not, in reasoning cold, the soul is made alone by earth's mechanic lifeless rules and to destruction prone. My God, who gave us life and all, alone the soul can kill, or give it all the joys above his promise to fulfill. So push on thy onward march, O soul, against an evil deed that stands with soldiers, hate and lust, a hero be indeed. Maintain thy post in spirit world as firmly as you can. Let never matter push thee down, O stand, heroic man. O Sara Grahi Vaishnav soul, thou art an angel fair. Lead me on to Vrindavan and spirit's power declare. There rest my soul from matter free upon my lover's arms. Eternal peace and spirit's love are all my chanting charms. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, being in Jagannath Puri, he also had the association there of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and also Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And he understood that they were pure devotees of the Lord. And he kept their association. And he continued to write literatures, transcendental literatures, about the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. Once he organized a book with all the various verses from Srimad Bhagavatam about the various topics based on the three topics of the Vedic literatures, Sambandha, Abhideha and Prayojana. So he organized all the verses, important verses from Srimad Bhagavatam in that way. He established the Bhakti Bhavan in Calcutta, and he moved his family there. so like this, he led a life of a perfect householder who performed his material duties, but also made time for his spiritual duties. Right? It's stated that when he went to the court as a magistrate to pass judgments, he could pass judgments quicker than he was, you know, within the morning session, 50 cases he could judge and give the dictations right there, the judgments. The British officers that worked also in the judicial system, they were amazed at how much sharpness he had to understand a case, understand it rightly, and, you know, dictate the judgment. Right? And his schedule is also mentioned in this book. I'll talk about it a little bit later. But then gradually, he became more and more attracted by preaching. And he would take time off from his government duties. And he would travel to various villages and perform sankirtan with other devotees. And they would do preaching activities. And in that way, they turned many persons towards the path of bhakti. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement had become, it was like an excuse. If you became a devotee if you wanted to beg. You chanted Hare Krishna if you wanted to be a beggar. So everyone's conception of what Chaitanya's movement, it was about begging. And there were so many apasampradayas. The pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers had become completely covered over. Nobody knew what it meant to be a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There were so many the Bola Sampradayas and the Gauranga Nagaris, and they all had their own bogus mental speculations about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by his writings and by his example and by his preaching, he rectified all those wrong understandings. Right? So we have a great debt to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur by his tireless workings and his writings to put everyone on the right track. Right? The idea of the Nam Hatha, that came from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the marketplace of the holy name. And he considered himself a sweeper in the market. Right? And you would buy things in the market by how much faith you had in the holy name. Right? And he said that Lord Nityananda was the organizer of the Nam Hatha. And there's a song called Dalar Gita where he describes Lord Nityananda, the marketplace of the holy name, and how can turn this terrible age of Kali into a wonderful age through the holy name. So we all know also that Lord Chaitanya is very nicely described, and Radha and Krishna's pastimes are described in the songs of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which was one set of songs is called Saranagati, and the other is called Gitavali, and so many bhajans are there. Some of them are in our Vaishnava songbook. And eventually, he became very much attracted to living in Navadvip, the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, my only desire is to live at the feet of a tree that is from the land where the son of Sachi lives. Right? He wanted to go to Nadia, and he tried his best to get his posting in Nadia. But none of the officers where he was working, they didn't want to let him go. But finally, through some influence, he got a posting in Krishnanagar, and he went to take that. And then from his old posting, he sent for his household items. But the British officer that was there at the time, he wouldn't send his things. He wanted him to come back. But eventually he did send his things, and he was posted there. And he made a house in Godrumadweep. And he was such an important person. If you can imagine, Godrumadweep is far off from Krishnanagar. But they made a meter gauge train line that went right to his house in Godrum so that he could come to work in Krishnanagar. So you can imagine how important person. They made a whole train line for him just for Bhaktivinoda Thakur so that he could come to Krishnanagar. Now that train line, they're changing into broad gauge. They tore up the tracks. And I told Bhakti Purushottam Swami that, you know, you should get these tracks and worship them because Bhaktivinoda Thakur rode in trains on these very tracks. They just had them thrown like on the side there. So he said he was going to do that, get those tracks and keep them as a display item in Mayapur. One of the other great contributions that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave to us was finding out the actual birth site. When he came to Krishnanagar and he was serving there, he would spend a lot of time in Godrum. And then he realized that Navadvip couldn't really be the actual birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because of many different reasons. One was that Navadvip, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, appeared, was on the eastern side of the Ganga, but the present-day Navadvip is on the western side of the Ganga. And he found out through government records that that Navadvip town on the western side of the Ganga was only about 100 years old. So how could it be the site? He had a doubt. And by doing research, finding out the old village maps, and also by inquiring from the locals, he understood that the birth site of Lord Chaitanya was in a place called Mayapur. And some locals told him about a mound of dirt that's always covered with tulsi leaves. Now, he was residing over in Navadvip. He had gone to Navadvip with his two sons, and they looked across the north and to the east. It was at night, and they saw that in one place there was a shining effulgence that was coming from across the Ganga. And they learned later that that place was Mayapur, Sridhar Mayapur. So he went there, he found the place, and he realized that this is the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. But he wanted to confirm it, so he requested Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was at that time like 120 years old, to come and see the place and confirm it. So they carried Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj in a basket in those days. And he was so old that his eyelids covered his eyes, right? But when he came to that spot, brought by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he jumped out of the basket and began to dance and chant the name of Gauranga. So this confirmed that this was actually the birth site. And when they were excavating to build the temple there, they found Ananta Vasudev, the household deity of Jagannath Mishra, there when they were excavating the foundation of the temple. And that deity is still there in the yoga pit at the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu... So that was another confirmation that this was actually the birth site of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was... Bhaktivinoda Thakur was always interested that the true teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be spread, right? But he felt he needed help. So he was praying to Krishna to please send me one of your own men, right, to help me spread your teachings. Right? And we know that he had a son named Bimla Prasad, who was born in Jagannath Puri and later became greatest spreader of Krishna consciousness, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the founder of the Gaudiya Mission. So one time, the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada that, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a personal associate of the Lord, a manjari, right? But he couldn't spread Krishna consciousness that much, right? Why is that? They asked. And he said, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an empowered devotee of the Lord. And if he wanted, he could have spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. But he didn't do it because he gave some work for us. Now by his mercy, we should follow his instructions and then we'll be able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So, about his daily schedule. Would you like to hear that? It's getting late. We have time? Okay. So, this is from his son, Ali Prasad. He described Bhaktivinoda Thakur's schedule. While he was staying in Jagannath Puri, he was never idle, being always engaged in the service of the Lord. Between 7:30 and 8 p.m., he would go to bed. He would then rise just before 10 p.m., light his oil lamp, and write books till 4 a.m. So maybe 2 hours sleep, 2.5 hours sleep. And then he would again rest for half an hour. At 4:30 a.m., he would wash his hands and face, sit down, and chant on his beads. He never showed his beads to anyone, but would chant on them constantly as time permitted. At 7 a.m., he answered all correspondence. At 7:30 a.m., read various religious philosophical works. And at 8:30 a.m., he received visitors, if any, or else continued to read to 9:30. At that time, he would walk back and forth in the veranda of his house, contemplating different religious questions and solving them in his mind. Sometimes he would solve them aloud as if preaching to some unseen guest. He would rest briefly from 9:30 to 9:45, then take bath and breakfast, which usually consisted of half a liter of milk, two chapatis, and some fruit. And at 9:55 a.m., the Thakur would don his uniform and leave for the court in his carriage. Jai. So that is one of the other characteristics of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is that he never wasted a moment. He was always busy, engaged, either in his duties or in studying, understanding about Krishna consciousness, and writing about Krishna consciousness in various ways, chanting Krishna's holy name. Towards the end of his life, he retired. Not towards the end of his life, but he retired from government service. And after government service, he became more involved in preaching, going village to village with other devotees and preaching, and also in the Bhakti Bhavan that was in Calcutta. He would preach there. And then finally, about 1904, he took Babaji Vesh from Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. And then the last 4 years of his life, he completely locked himself up and did, Nirjan Bhajan, always chanting. And he writes about that time where he wrote, he wrote the 10 mulas of his niyams, or the rules and regulations that he would follow in doing his bhajan. So those are explained here. If you get an opportunity, you can read them too. But later on in his life, there was a British officer who wanted to meet Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's faithful servant, Krishnadas, he told Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, okay, he can come. So he came. That time that officer's name was William Duke, and he was the chief secretary of Bengal. And he was actually getting ready to retire, this British person. And he came and he met Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he said, I used to go to your house, and your wife would feed me puris and sabji. And I was always astounded by your activities, by your energy, by the work that you could do. But I thought you were a threat to the British Raj. And I actually was working behind the scenes against you. He said, but now I realize that I was wrong, and I want to get your forgiveness. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a little amazed that this British officer was working against him. But then he thought it was also quite noble of him to beg forgiveness. So he forgived him, and he never held anything against him. That's one of the qualities of a great Vaishnava, is that they don't hold anything against anyone. They're always merciful and forgiving. So then he was in Godrum, in his house there. In his house, the original fan that he had is still there. And I used to wonder, because there was no electricity in those days, so how did the fan work, right? But one Pancharatna told me that it used to work by kerosene. There was a system that by kerosene the fan would turn. And this room is very simple, just a desk one bed. His books are there with all his works. Very, very simple. But in that place, he did his bhajan. And then he also spent a lot of time in Puri, in the Bhakti Kutir, where he did his bhajan. And then finally he left in the year 1914. And his samadhi is there in Godrum, in that Sarabi Kunj. Jai. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki. Srila Satchit Ananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai Gaur Premanande.